Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for all of you today. My guest will be Alexander Jarofsky. He is a founding member of the World UP, and UP stands for Understanding and Peaceful Global Community. And it's a collective of innovative and passionate people who dream of an understanding and peaceful global community. So I'm really excited that he'll be joining us. But first, I want to go over some of the things going on in and around the news, some ways you can take action, and of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So here we are still dealing with police brutality towards people of color. It's just unacceptable. And yesterday, actually, on Monday, I was so proud to be a part of a demonstration on Long Island, which was the largest demonstration I've ever seen on Long Island. There were thousands of people, and usually in Long Island, we're lucky if we get 50, 100. This was thousands of people standing, you know, side by side, trying to practice some social distancing. Most people were wearing masks, but standing side by side in solidarity with her Black and brown brothers and sisters, all demanding that this police brutality and racial profiling just stop, and we have to dismantle it. And the reality is that this is learned behavior. This is ingrained into police department and into our government. I mean, you know, they're just talking about all the different accusations against this Chauvin police officer. How many times was there a complaint against him that was just brushed off or that was settled out of court at taxpayer money? Just unacceptable. These issues have to be taken seriously. Those that stood by and watched should also be held accountable. It is just clearly not okay, and we need to all come together and let it be known that we will not stand for this anymore. You know, we have an administration that likes to incite violence, likes to encourage people to fight. He does not know about peace. He does not know about loving kindness. He's just a gangster, a thud in the White House, and we've got to get him out. And so it became very clear yesterday at this, Tuesday at the rally, that we need to get everybody out to vote. It is so, so important. What is going on is just not okay. And so on Long Island, there's a couple different organizations. There's the Long Island Racial Justice Coalition, and they are working through Indivisible Long Island. And so you can go to indivisiblelongisland.com to find out about more actions. And Indivisible is a organization going on all across the country. So you can go to Indivisible from wherever you are and try to find out about actions. Google dismantling racial injustice wherever you are, and try to find the local organizations in your area that are working to bring people together to protest the brutality against George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and, you know, going back to Eric Gardner. I mean, it's just, you know, the list goes on and on. Even white supremacists like the father and son that shot Aubrey and, you know, the jogger in Georgia. I mean, these things just cannot continue, and we need to step up and come together. And so there's ways that you can take action. Right now they're asking us to repeal part of the civil rights law that hides police records from public and makes them inadmissible in court, which needs to be repealed. There's also a bill in the Senate being proposed that there's an disciplinary action commission set up for the NYPD, but I guess that's also for police departments across the country. There needs to be independent commission that hears the complaints and we need transparency, and we need to stop settling out of court with taxpayer money. That's just not okay. You know, and then these police get to retire with full benefits for the rest of their life. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So please, please let it be known how you feel. Join people across the country, wherever you are, and let's try to dismantle this systemic racism that plagues our nation. And what else do I want to talk to you about? Also 5G. This week is a global protest week against the rollout of 5G technology. And 5G technology has still not been proven safe. And yet they're rolling it out big time all across the country and across around the world. And it's just a scary, scary thing. The more I learn about it, the scarier it is, especially because we have no power to stop it, although we're going to try. And so there's lots of things that you can do this week and going forward to let your voice be heard. We're asking people to write letters to their congressmen, to FCC, to the media and telecom companies like Verizon and T-Mobile. Reach out to the Americans for Responsible Technology. Actually, later today, they are having a webinar that you can take place with, that you can join. You can find out about it on my website or just Google on Facebook, or go to Facebook and search Americans for Responsible Technology, and you can find out about this webinar. And what else? And then on Saturday, there's a hike and bike protest also for the 5G. And there's a great organization in Huntington that's been working really hard called Citizens for 5G Awareness out of Huntington, Long Island. And they've been working really hard to get this word out. And I applaud them for the hard work that they've been doing. And my Zoom classes continue this past week. Last night, we made a vegan barbecue tempeh, which is just such a great recipe, and I'm so excited to share it with all of you. Barbecues were a part of my upbringing. My father was from the Midwest, and he loved his barbecue. And when I became a vegetarian, that was the one thing that I really thought I was going to miss. Like, how am I going to not participate in his annual barbecues? And when I say annual barbecues, they were an event not to be missed. He invited the whole neighborhood. Everybody came. We had so many people, and he had racks and racks of baby back ribs that he would do on his smoker, spend all day at it, and that's what he'd serve. Well, my barbecue tempeh so much stands up to those baby back ribs that at this point, nobody in my family eats the baby back ribs. We just do the barbecue tempeh. So I'm using his same barbecue sauce. I've made a few adjustments that there's no artificial ingredients and no butter in it. He used to use butter. I now substitute that for coconut oil, or you can use any kind of olive oil is fine as well. And so I've just, you know, tweaked his recipe for the barbecue sauce, and then I put it onto the tempeh. And if you have time to marinate it, all the better. But if you don't, you can just bake it in the oven so it gets caramelized, or do it right on the grill outside. And it is a great summer recipe. So in anticipation of summer barbecuing and eating outside, where we all have to maintain our social distancing, this is a great, great meal. So you need one package of 3-grain tempeh. Now, one package, for those that know, it's only 8 ounces. So that's, you know, good for 2 people, 4 people if you don't eat a lot. So you can double, triple, quadruple this recipe as much as you want as far as the tempeh goes. The barbecue sauce is already making a big batch. It's making enough for at least 10 packages of tempeh. But the barbecue sauce, because it takes some time and has so many ingredients, I make a big batch. Very often I even double this recipe, make a big batch, and then put it in the freezer. And it freezes great, and I take it out as I need it. The barbecue tempeh also freezes well, so if you make extra barbecue tempeh, you can freeze that in little packages. Sometimes I'll put it in Ziploc bags, you know, just, you know, like 8 pieces. One block makes 8 pieces, and I'll just freeze 8 pieces at a time and just be able to defrost what we need. So for the ingredients for the barbecue sauce, you need 1 large onion, 1 tablespoon grated ginger, 2 large green peppers chopped, 1/4 cup olive oil, 2 celery stalks, about 1.5 cups of celery chopped, 4 tablespoons finely chopped garlic, 1 tablespoon Dijon mustard, 1/2 teaspoon of dry wasabi mustard, 2 tablespoons of horseradish. That's already prepared horseradish is what I use, but you can grate fresh horseradish as well. 1/2 cup of Worcestershire sauce, and you need to find vegan Worcestershire sauce for this. 3/4 cup of white vinegar, 1/2 cup of honey, 1 tablespoon chili powder. Now, if you actually are a strict vegan and you don't use honey, you can substitute agave here. You can also use maple syrup. 2 teaspoons sea salt, 1 teaspoon marjoram, 2 teaspoons thyme, 2 teaspoons oregano, 1 tablespoon tarragon, 2 teaspoons basil, 3 tablespoons molasses, 1 teaspoon liquid smoke, 1 teaspoon cayenne pepper, 11 shots of Tabasco sauce. And Tabasco sauce, you just hold it upside down and you just shake it, and 11 of those times, the right amount comes out. 2 cups of water, 2 small cans of organic tomato paste, 28-ounce can of organic diced tomatoes, 1 18-ounce jar of Trader Joe's barbecue sauce, but you can use any organic barbecue sauce that you want. Just add a little depth to this. And then 2 cans of Trader Joe's fire roasted tomatoes with chipotle peppers in it. And you're going to saute all the veggies in the olive oil first with the garlic and the ginger until they're soft. Then add all the remaining ingredients. That's it. And just going to simmer that down for about 45 minutes. You know, you want to let some of the water evaporate for the sauce to become thickened. And that happens just by letting it simmer on the stove. While that's simmering, meanwhile, you're going to cut the tempeh in half and then into quarters. So you have 4 pieces. And then each of those quarter pieces, you're going to slice horizontally down the middle so that you now have 8 pieces from 1 block of tempeh. And like I said, you can use as many blocks of tempeh as you want. But I cut them into strips. And then you can either saute the tempeh, or I've actually taken to baking it in the oven. So I brush the tempeh each side with some olive oil or safflower oil, and then bake it in an oven at 375 degrees until golden brown, which will take 10 to 15 minutes. And then, after they're golden brown and the barbecue sauce is ready, you can let the tempeh marinate in some barbecue sauce. So I just take like a lasagna pan and I put some barbecue sauce down on the bottom. I lay out the tempeh, put some more barbecue sauce, and keep doing that till all the tempeh is covered with barbecue sauce. Let that marinate at least for 1/2 hour, and then you can either bake it in the oven where it will caramelize right in the oven, or you can put it onto the grill and just brush it with barbecue sauce as it's cooking. And that is it. It's super easy. Super delicious, and like I said, you make a big batch, and then you can have it easily accessible all summer long. So that's really, really nice. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest, Alexander Jurofsky. As I said, he's a founding member of World UP, and World UP is a collective of innovative and passionate people who dream of an understanding and peaceful global community where everyone belongs, everyone is celebrated, and everyone's appreciated for our differences. And they're working to build World UP by improving access to resources that allow humans to connect, learn, and empower each other through kindness and love. And I'm really excited to see how they've been reacting to what's been going on across the country since George Floyd has been killed. But Alexander, as I said, is one of the founding members, and he's been involved since its inception in 2016. And his passion for providing learning opportunities to those who do not readily have access to them brought him to World UP. He's originally from Long Island, New York. He attended Cooper Union for the Advancement of Science and Art in Manhattan. And Peter Cooper, who founded Cooper Union, he was born into a working-class family and was unable to afford the cost of higher education. And it was his belief that education should be free as air and water, and that it be accessible to all who wanted to learn. And that's why Cooper Union, to this day, is still free for everyone who attends. And it's during Alexander's time at this school where he embraced these values by meeting many talented and diverse first-generation college graduates with a love for learning. Alexander actually works as a chemical process engineer with Advanced 6 in Chesterfield, Virginia, and does this work with the World UP in his free time. So, Alexander, are you with me?
Yeah. Hi, Bhavani.
Hi, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. So I thought maybe you could start by just giving us an understanding of what World UP is, its mission, who works it, and how many people you serve.
Sure. Well, thank you for going through and talking about our mission statement. And you know, our goal is to create safe spaces for people to connect and learn from each other and interact and ultimately create a more understanding and peaceful community through listening, but also through conflict and difficult and sometimes awkward or challenging conversations, how we ultimately get to a better level of understanding and create a more peaceful community.
Mm-hmm.
So currently,
well, I first reached out to you because I heard you had a mobile food pantry, and that's what I thought you mostly did. So you do, in addition to a mobile food pantry, you put on other events, or how do you bring people together?
We do have a mobile produce pantry, and this is our first big initiative that we've launched that falls under the umbrella of our organization of creating a more peaceful community. So, you know, just to try and kind of tie in how that relates to our mission statement, I mean, first of all, food is culture. I mean, it's what connects. It's one way, you know, that connects all of us. But also we're creating more access to resources, for, not just some obscure community. This is our neighbors. You know, a lot of us who don't have to think about maybe where our next meal is coming from don't realize that in our own communities, maybe just a mile away, not even, many of our neighbors are struggling just to find where their next meal is coming from. They don't know where that is. And there are so many wonderful food pantries in our community that provide to these vulnerable communities.
Oh, yeah, we're seeing it on Long Island big time, especially, you know, during this time with the coronavirus. Over 40 million people are out of work. The majority that have lost their jobs are, blue-collar and service-oriented jobs, not as many of the white-collar jobs, which could, you know, easily be used, you know, transferred to working from home. But so many of the service jobs and the essential workers, either essential workers are still working or they were just laid off, and they are really hurting. You know, I provide school lunches in Glen Cove. I'm the farm-to-school coordinator there, and they instantly started setting up a food pantry there. And it has been hundreds of people in the community, a community that you would think, you know, is more affluent. Everybody is making use of this food pantry. Kids are coming for lunches every day. They're picking up breakfast and lunch every day, and they're taking a box of weekly produce home with them. It's just, you know, the coronavirus has just brought it all to the forefront so everybody can see, you know, how many people there are that are in need. But it's immense. It's huge. So the mobile food pantry is your first initiative with the World UP?
Our first major initiative, yes. So we first partnered with the Northside Outreach Center, which is a food pantry in the Northside community of Richmond, back in 2017. And we wanted to learn more about that specific community's struggles and needs. And you know, through working with them, we found that, you know, they weren't able to provide fresh produce to that community because they just didn't have the storage capacity. If you're serving, say, 100 families, how much each distribution we give out, about 1,000 or so pounds of fresh produce, that's a lot of space to keep refrigerated goods. And most small food pantries don't have that. And so working with them and who provides them with their food that they distribute, Feed More in Richmond, we came to learn that it's not just a unique challenge for Northside Outreach Center, but all across Richmond, there are many food pantries that aren't able to provide this fresh produce to their communities because they just don't have the space to put it. So that's where we realized that in order to have the biggest impact in our community, we needed to be able to store the produce and transport it, eventually to multiple food pantries across the Richmond area. And our executive director, Liz Duquette, found a company, Store It Cold, that had a prototype for retrofitting a trailer so that it could safely store fresh produce and be refrigerated. And so we fundraised over the last few years, and thanks to so many people, generous people in our community, and the generous grant from DuPont, we were able to construct the mobile produce pantry last year. And we had our first distribution at the Northside Outreach Center in September. And since then, as I've said, we've distributed about 1,000 pounds of fresh produce to the community per distribution. And this year we're on track to provide fresh produce to over 2,000 people at that one food pantry alone. And especially in recent months with the coronavirus pandemic, we've just seen the need grow.
Absolutely. So where are you getting the produce from? Are you connected directly with farmers? Are you doing food rescue where you're picking it up from supermarkets where it's, before it goes bad? How are you actually acquiring the produce that you're distributing?
Yes, that's a great question. There's this wonderful organization in Richmond that we partner with, Feed More. They connect with the farmers, supermarkets, donors, and get food to distribute. And then they give the food to different food pantries all around the Richmond area. They're able to provide, since the food that comes in is donated, they're able to provide the food to the food pantries for, the cost of keeping their lights on. But they don't have the infrastructure to distribute the produce to individuals within the community. So that's where it falls on the food pantries. But like I mentioned, a lot of food pantries in the area struggle where they don't have the infrastructure to store and distribute fresh produce. And so that's where we tie in. So we get food from Feed More, and then we're able to distribute it to the community directly in partnership with an existing food pantry that can't distribute fresh produce.
And do you have volunteers that do the driving and the distributing, or do you actually have trucks? How do you actually do that?
Well, we currently, there are seven of us on the board of World Up, and we're all volunteers. There are generous volunteers from in our community who help. Sometimes we'll get our friends or significant others to help out, or there are other generous people in the community who will help. DuPont has also provided volunteers to us. And we're excited that we've just raised enough money to be able to hire an employee who will be the program manager for the mobile produce pantry. So what that means is they can coordinate all the interactions with the food pantry and bringing the truck and loading the truck, or bringing the trailer and hitching it, loading it up with produce. And that will enable us to go to multiple food pantries each month. Because right now, since we're all volunteer-based, we only have the capacity to distribute it or one food pantry every month. But if we're able to go to three or four, you know, the impact on our community grows so significantly. So we're really excited about that, and we expect later this summer to be distributing at multiple food pantries in the area.
Uh-huh. So right now you're really only distributing to one food pantry a month?
Yes.
Ah, okay. So what does the organization do in between the deliveries? Are you, like right now with the protests that are going on with, you know, George Floyd's killing, has your organization been involved in mobilizing people or joining other existing organizations addressing this?
Well, we always speak out against injustice, of course. And like I said, we create safe spaces to connect, to discuss, you know, because something important, and I'm so happy to hear that, you know, you went out and joined the protesters earlier this week. That's wonderful. And one other point is we can't go on turning a blind eye to systemic racism in our country. We need to keep this issue on the forefront. And, you know, when the protests stop, we can't stop talking about this. We need to continue having uncomfortable conversations and create those safe spaces where we can learn and grow from each other. So, you know, even our mobile produce pantry, so it's kind of two-pronged, right? We're filling a need within our community, but we're also generating discussion among people who, you know, are privileged and don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. Those uncomfortable discussions where, hey, it's not just, you know, some nebulous people are hungry and need help. These are people within your own community, your own neighbors, who are struggling to eat. And, you know, talking through that. So any, you know, so going forward, we want to grow initiatives that both serve the need of our community and also create a more understanding, peaceful society by having tough conversations about inequality, especially systemic racism, and what we need to do to address that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So did your organization have any problem taking money from, you know, a company like DuPont? I know, you know, that's an issue that so many nonprofits struggle with, you know, when it comes to taking money from people that are polluters, you know, or organizations that are polluters. I mean, I know DuPont, you know, has recently settled, you know, a lawsuit for releasing millions of pounds of chemicals into the Ohio River, you know, causing thousands of people to suffer, you know, kidney and testicular cancer. And, you know, I mean, you know, DuPont is, you know, one of those companies that I'm sure would love to give you money to try to greenwash some of the bad that they do to society. Did you guys have any problem with taking that money, or you just
needed
the money?
Well, the way we see it is, you know, the money that they gave to us, you know, it's being repurposed from their profit directly to helping our community. So that's what's important to us.
Right, right.
In having that impact on the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, it's a struggle. I know a lot of nonprofits struggle with that. You know, it's like we need the money that these chemical companies have, and so we take the money from them, even though the money is kind of like dirty money. You know, they made it on the backs of people getting sick, and you know, it's a catch 22. There's no really great solution, I don't think. Anyway, let's take a couple minute break, and when we come back, I would like to talk more of how the mobile produce program's really impacting the Richmond community. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Alexander Jarofsky, founding member of the World UP. Be right back.
Why would anyone ride on top of an elevator, lug around an 11-pound large print dictionary, or compete in a swim race unable to see the course? Well, this is me, and I've got some riveting experiences to share with you. Hey, I'm Mark Farrell. Join me for Insight, a new show coming to PRN.FM. It's about overcoming adversity, and who doesn't experience this in some capacity? I'm no doctor, but I'm an expert in me since I've been dealing with various forms of adverse conditions all my life, like having a rare visual disability that challenges much of what I do. Insight, real-life issues, including mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol. Celebrity guests will also reveal on Insight how they overcame adversity to make it, as well as your calls on challenges you struggle with. My difference makes me stronger. That's my mantra. Listen and discover how your difference makes you stronger. Insight, Thursdays at 11 a.m. only on PRN.FM.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and my guest is Alexander Jarofsky. He is one of the founding members of World UP. UP stands for Understanding and Peaceful. And they're a global community of volunteers, mostly in the Richmond, Virginia area, working to celebrate differences and building a more peaceful community. Alexander, you with me?
Yeah.
Great. So how does the mobile produce pantry affect the larger Richmond community?
Well, so what we pride ourselves on in the mobile produce pantry is, you know, not just, which is very important to provide healthy produce, you know, to vulnerable communities that don't have access to it, but it's choice. And so before the pandemic, our pantry is constructed like, you know, almost like you walk through and out. So people in our community who came to shop at our mobile produce pantry and pick their own produce, whatever they wanted, they needed. Obviously, you know, it's all provided to them. They, with the coronavirus pandemic, of course, we couldn't have hundreds of people walking through in the same space, you know, feeling through different produce. So instead, we've adapted. We just feel that, you know, especially in these challenging times, it's so crucial to still, you know, provide the choice to the community. So instead, we take orders, you know, from whoever in our community is coming to the mobile produce pantry, and we fulfill those orders, you know, to make sure everyone gets what they need.
And with the COVID-19, has the operation changed any other than, I guess now since they can't shop, you're boxing it up for them?
Yeah, that's the main change. We used to also, you know, have a self-serve coffee station. Obviously, unfortunately, we can't do that. And then we'll just have, you know, we'll make sure that no line that forms, or you know, people are social distancing. But yeah, essentially the main change was that, you know, we decided to fulfill orders instead of having people, you know, hundreds of people walk through the same area.
And with the produce, one of the things that I've seen a lot of times with handing out produce is a lot of times people don't know how to cook anymore. You know, a lot of people have lost those skills because they're so used to fast food and their mothers are working double jobs and they can't cook. And so many people don't really know what to do with vegetables. Have you found that? And have you, you know, thought about giving any type of cooking classes or recipes with your produce to help people make use of it?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that. So, you know, our first step is obviously to increase the number of food pantries that we partner with to get more produce out. But one of our next steps for the mobile produce pantry is to give cooking demonstrations. You know, if you got, say, if we have rutabagas to distribute, who knows what to do with a rutabaga? Well, I'm sure you do. But, mm-hmm. you know, the meat, I wouldn't know what to do with it. So, you know, just to try and help provide healthy options for preparing your own food, that's definitely, you know, after we expand the number of locations, that's our next step for the mobile produce pantry.
Is to start some cooking demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them at farmers markets. I'd go into different farmers markets and do cooking demonstrations right there in more challenged neighborhoods that, you know, could really use that service. And it was great. And but the one thing that I found that was just so amazing was how many young kids were there, not with their parents, but more with their grandparents. And their grandparents were telling them, oh, you won't like it, and, you know, discouraging them from even trying it before they even tried it. And I found that really interesting because very often the kids would win, they'd keep begging and they would try it, and they did like it, you know. So it was interesting how very often I think, you know, the older generation, if you don't like something, you assume the younger person in your circle is not going to like it either, as opposed to trying to encourage them to like it. So that was pretty interesting. Yeah. What's next for the mobile produce pantry? I mean, you know, who knows how long we're going to be dealing with the COVID, which, as you said, changed a lot. But do you think that you're going to be able to rev up in this season, given that the COVID is happening, to get to more food pantries and get to more, ultimately to more people?
Well, it's not just if, it's we have to get to other locations and expand, because with everything going on with coronavirus, food security is only becoming more and more of an issue. And so that's why we're so excited that we're bringing on a new employee to manage the mobile produce pantry. And the big goal of that individual would be to make sure that, you know, we expand our footprint on the community and provide more produce to the most vulnerable communities in these times.
Mm-hmm. So this will be your first paid employee?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so where will you get the funding for that? Is that also coming from DuPont, or do you do fundraising? How are you going to support that?
Both. So we did receive a grant from DuPont, and we also received funding from our community.
What kind of fundraising do you do?
All sorts. You know, we post on Facebook. Have fundraising drives, fundraising events. You know, one thing we're ramping up now is a campaign to get more recurring donors. So, you know, a lot of us are fortunate enough where another $5 every month might mean another streaming platform that you get to watch, or maybe it's you decide to get delivery instead of takeout. But if you add it up, $5 a month over the course of the year can provide all the food for one of our distributions. So think of that. Sacrificing maybe I'll cook food at home today, or maybe I won't go and get that extra coffee, whatever it is. Every month, you have the power to provide 1,000 pounds of produce to a vulnerable community, and not just any, but in our own neighborhood. So we're trying to get more of those recurring donations, to help power us through, not just to sustain, but to grow, and not just the mobile produce pantry, but, what comes next.
Mm-hmm. An organization on Long Island that you might be familiar with since you're from Long Island, did you know they used to be called Food Not Bombs, and now they're called Community Solidarity? But they actually recruit hundreds of volunteers from the colleges on Long Island. They get so many young people to help recover food from supermarkets, all fresh. They don't take, they're not doing any of the canned stuff. Those come from the food pantries that people can get that. But fresh produce is almost all fresh produce. They get flowers, too. They're pretty much a vegan organization, so they don't really take cheese and milk. But if they go to a store and they do have milk that, has to get distributed, they will take it if they're handing it out that day. But they recover so much produce that otherwise ends up in a landfill. So they're also helping to solve the problem of food waste while at the same time distributing it to people that need it. So it's, working both ends of the broken system in a sense. They're saving it from the landfill and yet they're giving it to people. And the majority of it is really good produce. It's just, supermarkets have to order ahead of time. And so they might not have gone through all of their cucumbers, but they get a new shipment. They don't want the new shipment to get old, so they put out the new shipment, and whatever's still in the back, there might be one rotten cucumber in a whole case, but it's beautiful. And so they take that, and that's what they distribute, and it's amazing, the thousands and thousands of pounds a week that this organization collects and distributes. And I know like the company Sabre hummus is down there, I'm sure they have lots of hummus that is getting close to the day that they could possibly donate to you guys. And so I'm just wondering, have you thought about expanding your footprint a little bit and getting out into the community and getting some of the, other food that otherwise would be going to a landfill, if you can recover that and add that to your mobile produce pantry?
That's such a wonder. It sounds like such a wonderful organization.
It is an amazing organization.
And our partner Feed More, they collect that produce, not just produce, but all sorts of food from the community, and that's how they're able to distribute it to, our food pantries. We're always looking at ways to be more innovative. Of course.
Does Feed More
definitely
do
a wonderful thought to consider?
Is Feed More also a recovery organization, or are they just getting donations?
They're getting food donations, primarily, but also financial. But they're not going to Kroger or whoever and purchasing food. It's Kroger or the supermarkets that give the food to them, donate.
Community Solidarity is not purchasing anything. It's all food that otherwise would be going into their dumpsters in the back. They need to make room for the new deliveries. And so it's literally food that otherwise would be thrown out. I'm sure you've heard the statistic, 40% of food in this country ends up in a landfill. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. So recovering the food is just such a wonderful, wonderful kill two birds with one stone type of deal.
Sure.
So what else is UP doing besides the mobile produce pantry?
So one of our big initiatives that we're going to launch, or we're looking to launch once the mobile produce pantry becomes more self-sustaining, is creating more community-run organizations, address inequality, but also inspire people to have discussions about inequality. So whether it's, you know, creating a community center or a daycare for working adults to have, you know, to bring their children to so they can work in a similar space. We're looking to help those ideas grow into fruition, just like with the mobile produce pantry. So as we get the mobile produce pantry expanded, we'll be looking at our next project. So we're excited to see our organization grow.
Now, I'm sure there's organizations in the Richmond area that are already doing that kind of thing, like a community center. Is there a community center that's already there, and why would you choose to try to organize it on your own versus partnering with an already existing?
Yeah, of course, we want to connect people to resources within the community. But it's also about getting that feedback from the community about what the biggest struggles and challenges are and growing those ideas into fruition, just like we did with the mobile produce pantry. So there are already in Richmond many food pantries. And, you know, a shocking statistic from 2014 is that Richmond at that time was the highest or had the most number of grocery stores per capita, but also the most number of food deserts per capita. So it's about connecting people to these resources and also finding what gaps are missing or what gaps are there, like in this case, fresh produce was a gap that's prevalent among many food pantries in our organization, and growing that idea into fruition. You know, we can take those ideas from the community and, you know, help mm-hmm. that grow. So it's not about, you know, just kind of sitting down and saying, this is what is needed. It's about having those conversations about what we need to do to ultimately understand each other more and create a more peaceful and just community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those statistics are pretty amazing. You know, at the rally this week, they were saying that Nassau County, where I live, is the number 5 most segregated county in the whole country, meaning that right next to a town like Garden City, where the average home is, you know, well over $1 million, and right next to it is Hempstead, where, you know, the average home is, you know, $200,000. I mean, there's just such disparity and between the socioeconomic realities of these towns. I mean, there's Old Westbury right next to Westbury. There's Huntington right next to South Huntington. You know, there's just, and the school districts, the quality of the education goes right along with that. You know, right next to a top Long Island school, you'll have, you know, with a 97% graduation rate, will be another school with a 40% graduation rate. It's just, you know, unacceptable. And so we need to just even out the playing field. And I think that's what it's all about. And I think that's what you're doing or trying to do in Richmond as well, in just starting the discussions and bringing people together, you know, for good. So I really applaud you for the work you're doing and wish you the best of luck going forward. Now, this had written to you earlier because I originally thought that this is what your full-time job was, but you and everybody else that's on the board, this is all volunteer, correct? You all have other full-time jobs?
Yes, that's correct.
And what is your full-time job?
So I'm a chemical engineer.
Uh-huh. And does that work at all inform the work you're doing with World UP, or are there just two totally different sides of your passion?
I'd say it's probably more two different sides, although, you know, it does help me, you know, whether I'm trying to come up with a innovative process improvement, you know, for a manufacturing facility and similar kind of thing. I don't just sit down and do it. I go and get input from, you know, all the various stakeholders involved. And just like when, you know, World Up, when we're trying to come up with an innovative solution to something, we don't just sit down and say, oh, here's what's needed. We gather that input from, you know, the stakeholders in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah, maybe I'm not doing technical calculations in World Up, but there are ways in which, you know, the work does tie together.
Uh-huh. Well, like I said, I really, you know, applaud you for what you're doing. I'm glad you have a group of people that are dedicated to do this with, because that makes it much more satisfying. And I wish you the best of luck going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bhavani.
You're welcome, and thanks for joining us. And everybody out there who's been listening, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green. Please join my Zoom classes at IE Green, which is every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'm not sure what we're going to be making next week, but I'm sure it will be delicious, so please join us. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now. I'm a